At UC Santa Cruz, plans are in place to significantly expand the campus by 2020 with the addition of new buildings, new roads, and nearly 5,000 more students. Already approved by the UC Regents, the university's long-range development plan, or the LRDP, includes a biomedical sciences facility, social sciences building, student housing, faculty housing, and a new road that would connect the campus to Empire Grade, another entrance on Empire Grade. The LRDP calls for about 5,000 new students, increasing total enrollment to 19,500. That's not including additional staff that would be needed to support those students. Opponents of the plan cite numerous concerns, including impacts upon local housing and traffic, water shortages, animal testing and experimentation, toxic, infectious, and radioactive substances, as well as the clearing of 120 acres of forest habitat. And I'm joined right now in the studio by Jennifer Charles. She's media spokesman for the Science Hill Tree Sit. We're going to be talking about these issues and in a little while taking your calls. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, George.
Thanks for taking the time to come in today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Maybe we could start off, we can get into some more of the more long-term picture in a moment, maybe delve back a little into some previous resistance that's gone on, but maybe we could start off right now just talking about what happened on November 7th and what's happened since, because last Wednesday was the start of this tree sit. There was a rally and some other things that happened, so maybe we can start there.
Sure. Early Wednesday morning, a group of individuals went to the site of the proposed biomedical sciences facility and climbed into the trees and put platforms up and began a tree sit. The police came by and arrested one individual at that time. This is early in the morning. This is about 4 o'clock Wednesday morning. Surrounded the area. There were, I believe, five people in the trees at the time who had no food and water because the police had cut them off from the ground and from the supporters that were going to bring them supplies. At 11 o'clock that day, there was a rally at the Bay Tree Bookstore to oppose UCSC's long-range development plan. And there were speakers talking about all different reasons, coming from all different backgrounds of why this plan is not good for Santa Cruz and not good for UCSC. And there were speakers for about an hour, and then the rally moved to the site of the tree sit to bring food and supplies to the tree sitters who had been up there all night with minimal clothing and food and water. The rally, when it arrived at the tree sit, came into a confrontation with the police. The police began using pepper spray and hitting people with batons as they tried to reach the trees. I can go into more detail on that later, but after a standoff with the police, protesters managed to surround first one of the trees and then another group of trees and get food and supplies up to the tree sitters, and the police backed off and were called off. And since then, that site, the parking lot where the biomedical sciences facility is planned to be built, has been taken over by activists and has become a really amazing and beautiful creative community space for people to come together and talk about all different issues, but especially the long-range development plan and how it's going to affect us.
You say that at one point, the rally, which started at 11 o'clock, that at one point protesters and cops clashed, and the protesters were trying to reach the folks in the trees who did not have food and water and hadn't for hours.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't they have food and water? Did they not come prepared? Isn't it normal for a tree sit to have support people that provide that kind of thing? And what happened that prevented it? Like, why didn't they have food and water?
The support people who were going to bring food and water to the people as they put up the platforms in the trees were interrupted by the police and had to get away from the police in order to not be arrested or harassed. There were supplies and there was plans to put them up, but those were interrupted by the police, and the police prevented anyone from getting near the trees after that. So
I think it was the morning of that I got a phone call from somebody up at the university talking about what was happening, and he said, one of the things he said was that there was someone hanging in the tree that didn't even have a platform.
That's true, yeah.
Was that situation resolved? Were they able to get onto something solid instead of dangling in the tree?
That person did spend the night in a climbing harness and sitting on tree branches. He lashed himself to the tree so he wouldn't fall asleep or fall or anything. He was well secured, but it was a concern. He also was there in only a t-shirt because putting the platform up had been a lot of work and had... You know, he was warm while he was doing that work. But then once the police surrounded them, he wasn't able to do that. The platform that was going in that tree was confiscated by the police. And that's why he was not on a platform.
So were all the folks who ended up in the trees people who even intended to be in the trees? Or was it more like, oh, we got interrupted putting up these platforms and now I'm kind of stuck hanging in this tree?
Everybody involved more or less planned on that. That's certainly a contingency, and I don't think anybody was upset that they had to be in the tree for any amount of time. Everybody who was involved was committed to seeing that project through. So
there was reports in some local papers. There was some pretty decent reporting, and then there was also some that was pretty slanted, I felt personally, saying things like, well, what was it? There was one headline that said UCSC cops used appropriate force or something like that. Mm-hmm. And basically what the headline was saying UCSC says the police used appropriate force, but it kind of came across like that was the opinion of the paper. And it was in a sense. But anyway, one of the things they were saying was what some of the papers were saying was that the protest turned violent and that some of the protesters attacked police line that was surrounding the trees and kind of tore down this plastic fencing. And you know, I'm just wondering what your response to someone who was concerned about that would be,
mm-hmm.
Who felt that maybe this action had been too extreme or something like that.
Well, I think that the police certainly turned violent. And if you look at the history of protests in the last few years at UCSC and at other UC campuses, when students come together and speak their mind, they are met violently by police. And I'm particularly thinking back to Tent University in 2005, when I think was maybe the first time we saw such a dramatic use of force against students at UCSC. But it certainly has happened since then. So I really wasn't that surprised at the show of force by the police officers, because I've been to other protests at this campus and I've seen that happen. I think that article that you're referencing was very much from the university's point of view, but they were very much on the defensive. They realized that I saw in that article, in that same article, they were defending one of the police officers who had his photo on the front page of the Sentinel with he had his arm raised and a baton in it, and he's about to come down on a protester and it looks really bad. And so that the entire end of the article is basically defending that individual and saying, well, that's not as bad as it looked. He didn't hit anyone.
The article, and basically what it was saying was that the Sentinel had spoken with Patty Saponi.
Mm-hmm.
She's this, I believe, the spokesperson for the Santa Cruz Police. This was a Sentinel article. And like you're saying, she went to great lengths to defend what he did, saying they don't have video of it. It's a still shot, I believe. I don't think that's video. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a still shot of him raising the baton. And then she gave this whole explanation that he actually hadn't hit anyone. And what had led up to it was that he claims the woman grabbed his baton or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying the police turned violent, but what if somebody says, well, okay, the folks that were there outnumbered the cops, kind of surrounded them, and then flooded forward and tore plastic fencing down and tried to run past the police and this and that. Maybe, what if someone was concerned and said, well, that might paint a bad picture, or the protesters, people might have a negative attitude if they heard that happened. They might not be so sympathetic with what you're trying to do. What would be your feeling on that? Or
It's definitely been really difficult. The university has been talking about how much they support protests on campus as long as it can be controlled and not successful. Basically, what happened that day is we saw protesters not being afraid to face the police and not backing down in the face of pepper spray and batons and violence. They weren't violent. The protesters did not attack the police, but they did hold their ground and they didn't let the fear of the police cause them to back away. I think one example of this is on that day at the protest, there was a moment where we knew that we had to decide what we wanted to do, and everybody sat down in small groups to discuss what to do next. And so people are sitting down in circles in front of the police line, talking calmly, and the police are pepper spraying and beating people that are near them. And so it's not something that the protesters do. And I think that this is something that people really need to think about when people come out and stand up for their rights and try to speak their mind. That is not a call to be beat by the police. And that's what we're seeing. And actually, in the city on the hill, the on-campus newspaper publication, students reported that police told them that they would target them because they had bandanas over their face to protect themselves from pepper spray and also to keep their identities hidden in this day and age of repression against activists. And they were told by police, if we come after people, we're going to come after you because your face is hidden. And it's just the police using excuses like this, like you're standing up for something, so we're going to target you.
But there was a moment where folks didn't just stand their ground, where they pushed past a police line and to get to the tree sit, right?
Mm-hmm, to get food and supplies. And definitely people were reaching over the police to try to get to the ropes. But nobody was touching the police or attacking the police.
Was there any arrests? Was anybody charged with... can you discuss what people were charged with and how many people were arrested?
Yeah, I believe that at the site of the tree sit in that altercation, I believe 5 people were arrested. As far as I know, they were all charged with trespassing, and none of them were charged with battery on an officer, assault, anything like that.
Which is interesting, because if they had any shred of anything
exactly.
to go after someone, or even none at all,
yeah,
then you can be certain they would. So that's interesting. Are there people still in custody, or has everyone been released?
Everybody was released that day, actually. They weren't even taken off site. They were held behind the police line, and at some point the police said, okay, we're going to cite you and you're free to go. And even actually one of the protesters said, well, maybe I'm not ready to go yet. And they were like, no, we really don't want you back here. And he was like, come on, arrest me. And they were like, no, we don't want to arrest you anymore.
So these folks, are they in need of support? Is there something, if there are people out there that are interested in doing something to support them, is that needed, or is that
yeah, there's definitely going to be legal fees associated with this. And we really appreciate the community's support. We don't currently have a PayPal set up to do something online, but if you come by the tree sit, which we really invite everyone to do, it's become a really amazing community space, and we would love to have people come by and find out more about what's going on, find out how they can plug in, and just see the space that we've been able to create there. It's really beautiful and amazing. And if you come, we could talk about if you have a way to donate to us. We'd really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And on Thursday, the day after the rally on November 7th and the tree sit beginning, there was a phone call to Free Radio to a show on Thursday night where people were saying, we need folks to come up to university. We are being harassed by the police. They're coming in and telling folks that it's a closed campus after certain hours and that they're going to be removed or cited. I don't know. What happened with that? Is there still problems? Is there still things happening in terms of harassment going on late at night from the campus police, or has that kind of faded?
Well, every day, I believe, or just about every day, a police car comes out and they read an announcement of Basically, in order to disperse or an announcement that what we are doing is illegal and that we're in violation of university codes. And then they go away. Definitely Thursday, people were still a lot more jumpy, thinking that the police were, you know, just any sign of a police car in our area was something to be really, really concerned about. And we still are concerned that the police are going to come back and possibly attack us again to get us to leave the site. But so far that hasn't happened. I'm not sure that the administration has fully decided how they're going to handle this. Definitely the tree sit is one thing, but the space underneath the tree sit has just taken on a whole life of its own, and people feel really attached to that space now. And the one thing I hear over and over from students is there's no other space like this on campus. There's no other place where we can come together and talk about all these ideas.
Hmm. Why do you think they're coming by and warning people periodically? Do you think that's just so that when they do come in, they can say, well, we warned you?
I'm pretty sure it's that kind of technicality. Once they have made an announcement like that, they can arrest people whenever they want, pretty much.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, streaming online at freakradio.org. The show is called Peace Talks. I'm speaking with Jennifer Charles, media spokesperson for the Science Hill Tree Sit. We're talking about a tree sit that is in opposition to the long-range development plan and also to raise awareness around this plan. And maybe this would be a good time to get into some of the reasons why folks that are involved in this tree sit and in the overall activities up there against the long-range development plan are so concerned about it. And I know that there's several components to it, and there's a number of different concerns. Can you just break down what those are and kind of what are people trying to accomplish, I guess, with the tree sit?
Yeah, well, there are so many concerns about the long-range development plan. It seems that it's almost astronomical, the number of people who are opposed to this plan. Number one in my mind, for me personally, is the development of Upper Campus. The addition of a new road that is going to cut right through forested area, and the destruction of 120 acres. That's something that is really close to my heart, because that's a space on campus and in this town that I love to be, and I feel really attached to that space. And also is going to have just a huge impact on the ecology of that area and the habitats. And in a bigger picture, some of the reasons why I came to UCSC, and I know other people came to UCSC, are really under threat, not just the forest, but also the level of education, the attention of faculty, the low ratio of students to faculty that has always been there and has always given this kind of personal attention. The sort of small liberal arts college feel, those things are sort of giving way to privatization and profit as the university tries to build research facilities like this biomedical sciences facility, where a lot of the research that will be done there will be funded by private corporations. And as we've seen on other campuses across the country, when private corporations are funding research, they want to control the outcomes of that research. They want to control what gets studied and what doesn't get studied. And they want to control their image. And they're definitely looking for certain outcomes, especially in the pharmaceutical industry, which is, you know, what this building will be related to.
So you say one of your main concerns is the 120 acres of forest that will be cut down to make way for a lot of this development.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of forest are we talking about?
We're talking about second growth redwoods, mixed evergreens, chaparral, a really important watershed area. That will, you know, be cemented over, and the water will not be able to get back into the aquifers. There will be a lot of drainage, sediment that goes into the Cave Junction, system, where there's really unique animals. I don't know if people are aware of this, but there are, there's two, species of spiders that the only place they live is in, the Cave Junction caves. And that's really special. And their habitat's going to be very highly impacted, and so many other ecological damage. The university is going to build on the red-legged frog habitat. And that's another endangered species that we're lucky enough to have on campus. And, it's going to have a huge ecological impact, but there's also, it's going to have such a huge impact on the city of Santa Cruz, on our water source and our traffic and the prices of housing, of rentals, which already is incredibly high. There's a lot of different aspects to this LRDP.
And the housing is because they can't house the students up there. They can't find a way to do that.
Well, they want to build additional student housing, but not all students want to live on campus. And certainly not all faculty are going to live on campus, and staff, and all of the things that this brings with it. It's just, if you look at the numbers, The plan calls for the population of UCSC to be about, I think, I don't have it right in front of me, but I'm pretty sure it's 25% of the population of Santa Cruz. And that's just a huge percentage is the university. And
So you're talking about an increase in water use. We're already struggling with that, and mm-hmm. traffic and housing costs and concerns that folks have about the direction that UCSC is going, and the forest that will be impacted. What is UCSC saying about these concerns? There's been some response, I understand, around the water, for example. I think they're claiming that, you know, they're using the same amount of water now that they did, you know, 15 years ago because of conservation efforts. And what kind of response have you heard from UCSC about these concerns? We'll deal with the phone and then we'll answer the question.
Sorry about
that. It's okay. Go ahead.
I know that Jim Burns, who is, I believe he's the director of public information for UCSC, and some of the things that he's saying about the long range development plan is that it's not a mandate for growth. You know, we don't have to expand to 4,500 students. It's just, that's just the possibility. He's saying it's just a general plan. The LRDP is just a land use map. It doesn't have anything solid in it, that it's not a commitment to building. He says also that, you know, students and faculty did have input in the planning process. Which when you're dealing with UCSC, their idea of giving you input is allowing you to state your opposition and then ignoring you and doing exactly what they plan to do anyway. And with the LRDP, part of the problem is that it is just a land use map, but that there isn't a long-term plan for this university, and that the number, the total enrollment number, 19,500, which is actually down from what they originally wanted, was 21,000. And that number was arrived at by the Strategic Futures Committee, which was a committee that was put together in 2003. And one of the faculty members who was on that committee has basically said that 21,000 number was pretty much completely arbitrary. It has nothing to do with the carrying capacity of the town of Santa Cruz, and certainly nothing to do with what UCSC can actually afford or can actually make happen. It's a number that they came up with, and then they created an LRDP that could accommodate that number. And so it's a sort of strange roundabout planning process where we come up with the big number and then we try to find a way to justify it and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed on a couple of the flyers for the LRDP resistance, which I think the Tree Sit is a part of, if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed there's comments like on one for the rally that says alternative environmentally superior land use options exist. And then on another flyer, I see alternatives exist, learn more and fight for the forest. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what is meant by alternatives.
Well, what that means is that in the long range development planning process, they basically narrowed down their options to two plans. One of them is the LRDP that we're looking at now that calls for the destruction of 120 acres of campus, of forested area. And the other one calls for more infill building, And a little bit of building on some of the meadows that are lower down on campus. And in the voting of for which LRDP got chosen, it was pretty close. But what they stated, why they chose the LRDP that we have right now, is because it preserved the aesthetics of a natural campus. And that's been a really big thing, is this focus on aesthetics that doesn't really have anything to do with something real and concrete. It's the, you know, when you first drive up to campus, you see these open meadows and fields, and that gives you the feeling that you're in a natural environment. So we need to preserve that. Meanwhile, chopping down the forest, chopping down the actual natural environment that does exist at UCSC.
Aren't the meadows equally as important as the forest?
I totally think that the meadows are very important, and I would like to see no expansion at all, personally. But that other LRDP that I'm referring to called for a lot more infill building, and it also called for building. The meadows are a less ecologically sensitive area than the areas that they want to build in. They want to have a great impact on a really important wildlife corridor, on Moor Creek, which is, I believe that's the red-legged frog habitat. And just other areas of upper campus that are really unique to Santa Cruz in a lot of ways, and also very sensitive.
What do you mean when you say infill building? What are you talking about?
Infill building would mean building close to buildings that already exist on campus. This is one of the university's favorite tactics as well. They like to, and you can kind of, we can imagine if this LRDP goes through, if you look at the map, they have some building that's a little bit, that's on that forested area that I've been talking about in upper campus. And there's kind of an open space between that and some of the other already existing buildings. And I can imagine that 20 years from now, when they file another LRDP, they will want to build there, and they'll call that infill building. But right now, infill building would mean, just building really close to on the roads that already exist on the already developed parts of campus.
What if someone was to say, well, the tree sit is in exactly an area that you're talking about, an area where there's a parking lot and there's buildings and there's already, you know, is that infill where they want to put the biomedical building where the tree sit is actually?
Yeah, definitely the biomedical building is infill building, but it is the first step in this plan that would lead to the destruction of 120 acres. And we want to stop this plan before it begins. We don't want to let them build the first building in this plan. And then they'll say, oh, well, it's already built. We're already underway. We want to stop it before it begins. And that's why we're there.
And part of the concern as well is the fact that this will house a future animal vivarium with animal testing going on and toxic substances. Can you talk about some of the other concerns other than the fact that they will cut down quite a few trees actually in this area to even put in the biomedical building? I think something like an acre and a half would have to be cleared for that building.
I don't know the exact numbers on that one, but I do know, yeah, there's a lot of other reasons. This building in particular would house, as you said, live animal testing, which UC Santa Cruz already does and doesn't talk about very much. And not a lot of people realize that goes on campus right now. But it does. And in the campus guidelines, some of the things that are permitted with live animal testing is food, air, water deprivation, grafting, non-anesthetized surgery, things like that. I mean, that might be a whole show in itself of why animal experimentation is not a good idea. And so many pharmaceuticals that are on the market now that are having really dangerous side effects that are getting pulled or in lawsuits, in class action lawsuits, were tested on animals. So it's not that this is going to be so helpful for people. This is a problem that we rely on animal testing. It's not very safe, and it's definitely harmful to animals. It's disrespectful of life. And it also creates a lot of hazardous waste, basically biohazardous waste. And the stuff that they do at UCSC in particular, because they're so wrapped up in the genome research and biotechnology and nanotechnology, we don't really know what the long-term effects of some of those things are, what kinds of things that they're creating there. They're playing with genes. They're splicing genes. They're saying, oh, we can take, you know, the gene that produces the web from a spider and we can implant it in some corn and or in a goat, and you like the protein, and so just a lot of really, why are they doing these
and
sort
and
of
you're
things?
And one of the concerns that you mentioned earlier was corporate involvement in all this, and the universities getting money from corporations to pursue this research. Why is that such a concern?
Well, I think that that's a huge concern. We've seen a really good example of how that works is at UC Berkeley. Ignacio Chapella, who was a professor there, was fired for coming out with information that went against what one of the companies there that was funding research wanted to hear. He was fired. He was later rehired because there was such an outcry from the Berkeley community. But that's what we're seeing. The companies that are funding these research, they want to have absolute control over that, over what comes out of that. They don't want the reports to be released if they're negative, if they aren't in favor of the company and their profit making ability. And that's a huge problem. That's, you know, it's not good for science students who want to do research. They can, if they have to adhere to funding, they can only do research that the private companies want to fund. So it's not expanding education, it's actually limiting it.
I want to let folks know that I'm speaking with Jennifer Charles, media spokesperson for the Science Hill Tree Sit. We're talking about the UCSC's long-range development plan and some of the reasons why the tree sit's happening and why people oppose the LRDP in its form, or maybe altogether in some cases. Anyway, I want to let you know that if you would like to call in, we're going to be on this topic for another 10 minutes or so, and the phone number is 427-3772. I cannot believe I blanked on that for a second. 831-427-3772 if you would like to call in and ask a question of my guest, Jennifer Charles, again, media spokesperson for the Science Hill Tree Sit. Jennifer, you mentioned UC Berkeley, and it brought to mind the tree sit that's happening there. There's some kind of sports stadium, there's facility with sports that they want. I don't know all the details, but there's a tree sit. And I'm wondering, it's getting the point with this tree sit where I'm thinking they built a wall around these people. What are they going to starve them out? They're going to bring in a cherry picker. They're going to just get them out of the tree, and then they're going to do what they're going to do. And it makes me feel helpless. You know, like, what... Do you really think this tree sit could stop the LRDP?
Well, I do, actually. And part of that is coming from Jim Burns, who keeps reassuring us that the LRDP is not a cemented plan. Great. I'm glad it's not a cemented plan. Let's change it.
Okay. Sorry, I was distracted there for a second because we have a caller and I wanted to bring them on. Hello?
Yeah. Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thanks for calling. Do you
have
a question, a comment?
Just a comment, because I've been talking with a lot of friends about what's happened up there this past week, and personally I just want to say, like, I'm a big fan of what they're doing. I think it's, like, I had thought myself, like, a creative way to resist the LRDP would be a tree sit, and I think they've picked a great place to do that, and they're drawing a lot of attention to some serious issues that need to be raised about the governance of the UC and the direction it's going, you know? The chief financial officer for the state of California said, like, the UC needs to be privatized to keep it solvent. A couple weeks ago in the media, I think in the Chronicle, he stated that.
Mm.
And that's just, like, what we're seeing with these relationships between, like, BP and UC Berkeley and what they're trying to do with UCSC, with the expansion of, like, this natural sciences at the expense of the social sciences is exactly that. You know, it's the first steps in this, like, larger neoliberal privatization model they want to apply to every aspect of, like, our lives, both here and abroad, you know?
You say that they... I'm sorry, go ahead.
A lot of countries have already, like, been subject to this, you know, this model, and it's been pretty resoundingly rejected, I think, internationally.
You say that the folks picked a good spot. Can you explain why you feel that way?
Well, I mean, the whole scope of the LRDP should be resisted in terms of its grand intentions. I'm not against expanding education, but the way they're doing it is, I think, morally and just doesn't make a lot of sense economically in terms of providing for our future. But in the immediate sense, I think it's a great way to draw attention to this larger plan by resisting the biomedical sciences building that's going to be doing, like, the animal testing and all that. Like, it's, you know, I think I would agree with your guess that it does have the potential to stop the science building. And there's already, you know, several court cases regarding this long-range development plan and its environmental impact report that the city of Santa Cruz is waging against the university. So, you know, drawing out the timeline they need to start construction and building might actually ultimately prevent it from being built, because if this court case is ultimately successful, they're not going to be able to just build it like they want to. So I think it's strategically a very good tactic to achieve a larger, I think, a campaign that students are waging, and I support wholeheartedly. And
well, thanks so much for calling. And
Final suggestion for your guest is, like, media representatives, just in terms of, like, how to frame the argument. I know that question came up, and I think this, from what I've read and seen and talked to people, heard, you know, it was primarily the state that was violent. I think the students and the protesters were disobedient, certainly, but, like, that does not necessitate, like, them being violent.
Were you there?
I wasn't. Oh. I can't say from first-hand experience. Like,
okay.
I said, from what I've read, from what I've seen on photos and videos, and from talking to people, it sounds like students were very clearly trying to assist the protesters. I mean, the people
sitters.
Up in the trees, they're trying to starve those people and deny them access to food and water. And
the police.
Yeah, that the police were. And I think the students definitely, and rightly so, resisted that tactic by the police. It was like, you know, it's like a form of torture. You know, how long can you last it out up there without food or water? That jeopardizes the tree sitters and their safety far more than allowing and respecting, you know, a creative protest like this country is supposed to, like this whole, you know, our freedom to organize. So disobedient, not violent. You know, the state really monopolized violence that day.
Thanks for your comments. I'm going to open it up just so we have a few more minutes so other folks can call. But thanks for calling.
No, thank you, guest, for a good interview.
Yeah, all right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So if there's other calls, 427-3772, we do have a few more minutes to spend on this topic, and then we'll be getting into a talk on GMOs by Andrew Kimbrell of the Center for Food Safety. We have another call. I'm going to take you, caller, in just one sec, but I wanted to mention that what the last caller was saying about some of the media reports reminded me of a claim that was made by the campus police that they were trying to protect people from falling branches, which was, like, really weird to me. We're going to pepper spray and baton you for trying to get food and water to people that have been in trees for hours without food and water. And we confiscated the food and water, and we're holding it somewhere, and we're not going to let them have it. But when you try to get food and water to them, we're going to club you and pepper spray you, and then we're going to say we're trying to protect you from a falling branch. I mean, I'm sorry. I shouldn't be injecting my opinion, but that was just really, really weird to me. Anyway, we have another phone call. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
I actually have a question for your guest about, do they have any overall limits for the growth of the campus? I mean, does this go on every 10 years that they're going to expand it more and more and more? So that becomes not only a city on the hill, but...
The city of Santa Cruz. Take it over completely. Is that your question?
Yeah. Okay. I've been here in Santa Cruz since 1958 and saw the transition through the 60s of, you know, the growth of the campus, as well as the influx of just people from Southern California. And it's dramatic. The separation is no more from Santa Cruz to Aptos, where there used to be separate and distinct communities. And I realize growth is inevitable, and people have a right to come here, but we will demand more from our resources than we can actually have. Water is limited.
Well, caller, what if we just build a big desalination plant? You know, we could put a bunch of energy into taking salt out of water, and then we'd have tons of it.
We'd have water, but then you get into the overcrowding situation, and I used to be able to ride my bicycle across town during winter and see 10, 15 cars, and it's just, it's...
So your question is basically,
is there a limit for how much they're going to grow within the next 50 years?
Okay.
Or is it an ongoing thing, like the stock market has to grow and has to grow? Well, isn't there a limit?
Okay. Well, thanks for your question.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
I can speak to that. I have read pretty much all of the long-range development plans have been filed since the school opened. And actually, the number in the 1965, when the University of Santa Cruz, UCSC, opened, their ultimate goal was to have 27,500 students up there. And I'm not exactly sure if that was, like, when the city of Santa Cruz agreed to let them lease that land, if they realized how big that would be. But that's an astronomical number if you look at the population of Santa Cruz and what it can hold. I think that number is completely out of nowhere. It's based more on the population of the entire state of California and how many students there might be by 2020 than it is on this region and what this region can sustainably hold. So there is no top number unless it's that number of what UCSC can grow to. I mean, in this LRDP, it's 19,500, but they file an LRDP about every 10 to 15 years, and it can just keep going and keep going. And that's why we have to come out now and say, stop already. This is enough.
So does that mean that you're opposed to any further students being added to the campus or any further development, that you feel it's reached its carrying capacity and that it should just simply not grow anymore?
I am not absolutely opposed to all expansion on campus, but the way that it's going about, they're definitely not taking everything into consideration. The planning process is really, really flawed. People raised concerns at each stage of the planning process and were basically ignored, so much to the point that the city had to take the UC to court. Students who and community members who are opposed to this don't have the money to take the UC to court. We just don't have that option. And I think that this movement, this protest and this tree sit is really coming out of frustration that there's no way to get the UC to address our concerns and we have to take to the streets.
Just have one more question myself, unless we get another caller. This will be my last question. You mentioned, it seems to me that most of the folks involved in the tree sit, involved in the protests that are going on up there, are students or former students, alumni. Not all. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some community members that never attended the school and don't now. But what about the argument that, you know, many of the folks involved in this had the opportunity to go to UCSC or, you know, are having that opportunity right now. And the UC is saying that, well, UCSC is saying that the UC needs to grow because, well, the population is growing and there's more students and we need to, you know, do our part here at UCSC to take on the new students. What about other people having the same opportunities maybe that you did, not to suggest that you, you know, had a more than you should or anything like that, but just what about, you know, what if somebody can't go to a university because there simply isn't anywhere for them to go because none of them expanded at all?
I think that question conflates a few things. It conflates the higher enrollment with access to education. And those two things are really separate. At the same time that this is going on, tuition for the UC system is rising. And so every year, less and less people can afford to go to the UC. Retention programs are not funded at all at UC Santa Cruz. You'd be astonished at how little funding the retention programs get. It's not increasing access. It's the same people who always get to go to college still get to go to college. And besides that, there's also other options. There's the UC Merced just opened, and other options like that of having other UCs in other places where it's not such a ecologically sensitive area and places that can have the resources to sustain a larger university. Santa Cruz does not have those resources.
So you're saying spread around these numbers to other campuses where they're better equipped to deal with the numbers in their community and are less, that there would be less of a ecological impact if they were to expand that campus.
I am saying that. And I'm also saying that if we're really concerned about getting more access to education for people, then we need to start funding programs that promote access for underprivileged people. And that's not what's happening under this LRDP.
Mm. So part of the things you're saying that the Science Hill protests, that there's a lot going on. They're talking about the LRDP, but other stuff. So are students complaining about now they want to raise the chancellor's yearly income by hundreds or tens of thousands of dollars, tuition's going up? Are these some of the things students are talking about up there?
Definitely. People have come to the community space that's been created under the trees for all sorts of different reasons. There's people who are there to speak out against the UC's ties to the military, to speak out against the privatization of our education, and to speak out against the out of control funding system that gives the chancellor and other administrators huge, huge raises. And meanwhile, the workers are making, you know, not very much money at all. There's a lot of problems at UCSC right now.
We do have another phone call. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to address, you were talking about how in terms of expanding the numbers of total students, either at UCSC or UC-wide, you were saying there's the other problem that tuitions are going up, but it seems that those are kind of two different issues. Like, there may be attempts to lower tuitions are important, but also ultimately there have to be more places, more students. If we're going to have more students, there have to be more space for students. So how do we address that? I mean, before you were saying that you felt the university shouldn't expand at all, that the habitat in the north of campus or down on the, you know, the more open meadows was both, you know, habitat that shouldn't be built on. Why is Merced less important? Why can we sort of destroy that habitat?
UC Merced?
Yes. Or any other place we might choose to build. Why is it somehow okay there?
Sounds like two different questions to me. It sounds like one is, we do need a place for these students to go to school. Aside from the tuition increase, that's a separate issue, you're saying. And then the other question is, why is it okay to expand other UCs and impact there instead of here? And if you don't mind, I'd like to take her answer with you off the air, because I do have to wrap up this conversation.
Of course. Thanks for the discussion.
Thank you.
Yeah, I personally, I don't want to see UCSC, you know, I'm speaking to two different things. I'm speaking to some of my personal opinions and also some things that I know the general feeling of people involved in the tree sit space are. I think that there are places outside of Santa Cruz that do have a larger carrying capacity. The city of Santa Cruz has really limited resources and really limited space. And we need to consider that, and we need to look at different areas and actually see, like, what can they hold. And so I don't know. I'm not, like, a planning person, and I don't have all the details about that. So I don't know what exactly the impacts of expanding at UC Merced or at UC or at other places would be. But I do know that, you know, expanding at UCLA is really, really different than expanding UC Santa Cruz.
And what about the issue of students having the opportunity? There is more of them. Take the tuition aside. Let's say tuition wasn't going up. There's still growing numbers of students that need an education and would like the opportunity for a higher education. Are you saying spread them around to other campuses, or?
I'm saying, that's partly what I'm saying. I'm also saying that, you know, we just increasing the enrollment does not increase access. And I think that that's really important. I don't think that can be separated from the tuition, you know. And we're looking at, you know, some of the regents who attended UCs and some of the former California governors, what they paid to go to a UC is the same as what I paid to go to a community college in 2000. And now we're seeing just the tuitions rising every year. Like, UC has permission to raise their tuition every year. Administrators are making a ton of money. Faculty members and staff are not making that much money. And student fees are rising. And this is something separate than tuition. And so we can't talk about, you know, letting more people get a higher education unless we're talking about how they get access to that.
What about the point that, fight to get tuition lowered, but we still have these numbers of students that are growing and that want a higher education, and shouldn't they have that opportunity? And the UCSC saying we need to be a part of absorbing those increasing numbers of students.
I don't think that there's any point in absorbing an increasing number of students if your quality of education is dropping. And that's what we're seeing happen through the privatization of education and through the just packing of classrooms. That UC Santa Cruz, their classrooms are totally crowded right now, and they're losing a lot of that attention to undergraduate education that they've had. So I'm not interested in seeing everybody get an education if that education is not quality.
Mm-hmm. And many of the folks that are coming are going to be they're expanding the graduate program. Is that right? That's one of the complaints I've heard, is that it isn't undergraduate, a lot of it.
Yeah, they would like to expand their graduate programs, where they've always been really, really focused on undergraduate education. And that's something that's really set UC Santa Cruz apart from other UCs. You know, at UC Santa Cruz, as an undergraduate, you could be involved in research. As an undergraduate, your professors actually taught your classes, which, unlike UCI and UCLA, where graduate students teach the classes, you actually have a personal relationship with faculty members. That's something that my friends at UCI don't even remotely have. Santa Cruz is losing a lot of those qualities that make it stand out, that make it a great place to go to school.
So if you could just let folks know they can get more information about the tree sit, about the LRDP resistance, mm-hmm. and then we'll just have to wrap up.
Yeah, well, I'd love to invite everybody to come out to the tree sit. It's at Science Hill. Every day at 4:00, we have a potluck and a meeting, and that's a great time to check in and find out what's going on. There's also events going on throughout the week. A good place to find out about those events is a website that is www.lrdpresistance.org. And that has a lot of information about the LRDP and about what events are going on campus. And I hope to see everybody out there. And I want to thank everybody who's been supportive already. Thank you so much for coming out and for your support.
And thank you for coming on the program
today.
Thanks,
George.